This is SB Nation Radio.
Who's there? You better run, you smart Alex.
Who is it, Brad?
Just a bunch of punks who better watch their back.
The next generation of sports radio.
I have a microphone and you don't.
So you will listen to every damn word I have to say.
Live from the Quicken Loans Studios in Houston, Texas.
Quicken Loans. Take advantage of historic low rates. Go to Rocket Mortgage today.
This is Prime Cut. Here's your host, the quarterback, Sean Salisbury.
Sean Salisbury Show, Prime Cut. And the bench warmers, Brian Barrett, Joe George, my man Adam Sager. 4 hours of it. It's playoff time. It's breaking news when it comes to coaches' times. Well, you know, that's a good tease, even though we really don't have a new coach in the NFL just yet. Sources close to me, Brian, Segs, and Joe, tell me that Vance Joseph is the leading candidate to be the head coach of the Denver Broncos, which would mean that the Denver Broncos are probably hoping that Miami gets beat immediately, which are hoping because John Elway, which I think a lot of us thought would go offense since Wade's there, right?
Yeah.
Who was Wade's mentor? I mean, who did Wade mentor?
Vance Joseph.
Like to get him in tow, which would mean Wade would stay on. The longer Miami stays in this, the more Wade Phillips, without a contract, starts to say, and breaking news, Jay Gruden did fire his whole defensive staff, you know, Joe Barry and the rest of them, which I think is no surprise to any of us. And remember the first time around, the Redskins had the chance to hire Wade Phillips, and Jay Gruden passed on Wade Phillips for Joe Barry. So the question is, with that staff, with the fact that if you're Gus Bradley, Rex Ryan, Rob Ryan, Wade Phillips. There's some guys that, and if you're Wade Phillips, you're thinking, how long do I wait before Vance Joseph? Or John just says it doesn't matter who we hire. They're taking you, John Elway, that is, as the defensive coordinator. But while all the talk's been Kyle Shanahan, who even came out and said the best job out there is Denver, which is a little bit odd because unless you've been, know you're going to get the job, don't you semi-close the door to a few other jobs saying, wait, I thought you thought that was the best one, so you're taking second or third best? How committed are you? But the word on the street, at least, now that could be, you know how these things can break down, that the leading candidate to take the Denver Broncos job is defensive coordinator Vance Joseph in Miami.
So did Kyle Shanahan make a big mistake here?
If he does not get this job, don't you think that? Now, it's only a big mistake if nobody else hires him.
Right.
Sakes. If he goes and does three more interviews and he sits down and plays the old I was misquoted or what have you, but he goes to the Rams or goes to the Jacksonville and says, yeah, that's the best job, but, and they're looking at him. I would always think that unless my, other than when we've agreed to terms and maybe it hasn't come out yet, when you know you're going to get the gig, go ahead and say it. If you're about to sign with ESPN as an analyst, say, that's the best job in the world. You know you're signing, fine. Well, the Fox, wait a minute, I thought that was the best. You know what I mean? So it's the same thing. So you got, I hope for Kyle's sake it doesn't backfire in his face. Maybe he's just a hot enough commodity that it doesn't matter. But supposedly Vance Joseph has the inside track. Now, one other thing, guys, I know that defense is going to be fine with Vance and Wade if that happens. Who are they going to hire as their offensive coordinator?
Yeah, that's the question because that's the biggest area on your team that you're concerned about.
That and quarterback.
Is the quarterback thing. And to your point about Kyle Shanahan, you know, this kind
Shanahan.
Shanahan, yeah, this process right now, it's kind of feeling like when Josh McDaniels was first up for a gig.
Right.
Where it's he feels like he's the all-powerful guy. Everybody was after him.
But no matter what he says, it's okay.
And then he tried to be mini Bill when he went to Denver. Remember, he tried to be this guy that was, all right, I don't want Jay Cutler. Gets rid of Jay Cutler. All right, I got issues with Brandon Marshall. I'm going to get rid of Brandon Marshall. And it seemed like he wanted control of literally everything.
Tried to be what he wasn't.
Yeah, and the way that Kyle Shanahan's kind of handling this coaching search, he knows that everybody wants to interview him. And he's kind of acting that way.
And you know what's interesting about that, too? Brian Barrett, Joe George, Adam Sager, myself, Sean Salisbury, is that what's interesting about it, the number 777.
2907.
800-777-2907 is, if you also recall now, if you know his dad, Mike Shanahan.
A little arrogant.
It may not fall far from the tree. Now, that doesn't mean Kyle's not a good coach and I don't love Mike.
Right.
And a lot of people, I think, thought it was a foregone conclusion that Mike was because Mike's relationship with John and he was his coach. Well, are we always perfectly sure that John and Mike are still best? You know, there's all you never know what's happened over the years and where the relationship stands. But you know, I'm sure when John knew Kyle when he was probably Kyle was just a snotty-nosed kid hanging around the football team. You know what I mean? And I'm not saying that that doesn't mean he's going to get the job. He's grown up into one hell of a coordinator and play caller, and it seems ripe for a job. But you're still, this will be his first head coaching job, so you got to tread a little lightly. Confidence is one thing, but you don't have to. I mean, it may be the best job. Let us say it on it. Us on radio and TV say it, as opposed to the coach. But maybe Kyle knows something we don't know. But the lot of word is that Vance Joseph's the leading candidate for that Denver Broncos job.
Would if Vance Joseph gets the job?
Yep.
Would it make sense because he's been around those player most of those players on the Denver offense? Would Mike McCoy make sense as the OC?
Oh, I don't think that there are people in Denver that want Mike McCoy as the head coach.
Right.
Even, you know, that when Mike left to go take that as when he was coordinator before Adam took over, that the relationship and everything, people in Denver loved Mike. And, you know, whether you want to blame the close losses on Mike or injuries or what, and then there was a lot of injuries in San Diego this year, regardless of where you want to point the finger, he's still popular in Denver. And would it make sense? Hell yes. If Mike McCoy's not going to be the head coach, if you're Vance Joseph, don't you go to John and say, let's go get Mike right now? I would.
Yeah, definitely.
I definitely would. So
he knows the guys. The playmaker.
No doubt about it, and would probably know what a good quarterback is. He only had Manning and Rivers. Not bad. So that would make a lot of sense. So that'll be we always look at the head coaching hire as the most important. You know what I mean, Joe? We always say a head coach, got to get the head coach, which is important. But who spends more time with the players is the assistants. And a team that's desperate need of offensive line help, healthy running game, and a quarterback, I think most of us would have thought offense. We already got the defense handled with Wade. It doesn't make sense. Well, Vance is very well respected, and you know Wade likes him. And then maybe John's going to have a big hand in bringing the offensive guy back and telling Vance or whoever, if it is Vance Joseph, who gets the job in Denver to say, yes, you can have the job, but here's who I'd like you to hire as the offensive coordinator. So,
do you think you could take
Say it again, Bud.
Do you think you could take the quarterback coach from I'm not even sure who it is right now, but the QB coach in Miami.
He could if he would elevate him to if he would elevate him to from a quarterback coach to offensive coordinator, from offensive coordinator to assistant head coach, that type of thing.
Yeah.
The key for me is too, as we look forward, is if in fact Vance Joseph does get the job in Denver. We talk about Denver's offensive coordinator, and Joe, you make a point. Does Vance feel comfortable enough there, or is it somebody from his background? Hell, Hugh Jackson's not available, so Vance can't take him to Denver where they were in Cincinnati. But my question is, then what does Adam Gase do with a very good defense, a growing defense? If Vance leaves, then where do you go?
Fangio.
Do you talk to Vic Fangio, depending on what goes on there? Do you talk to – are you interested in Rex or Rob Ryan? Or do you say – damn, Vance, if you're going to take the job, take it quick so I can call up Gus Bradley and bring him to Miami. I mean, so there is a very – how this thing maneuvers, it's like when the first guy goes, where are the rest going? Would it be interesting – I mean, then you sit there and say, who's Atlanta's defensive coordinator off the top of my head? Do we remember who it is? If somebody has their computer in front of them, I'm trying to remember.
Well, either way, he's a secondary guy.
That's what I'm saying. I'm trying to remember because Quinn's there.
Richard Smith.
There you go, Richard Smith. Now, let me ask you this.
Rick Smith.
Would Dan Quinn call Gus Bradley? Atlanta's weakness is what?
Right now, it's defense, but it is improving.
No, they're getting
really
better.
Well. Yeah.
Does Dan Quinn comfortable enough with Richard Smith to keep him a defensive coordinator? Or would he call up Gus Bradley and say, let's say they give up 30 in a playoff game. Would that be a possibility that Gus Bradley take over with that offense and say, hell yeah, I'll come coach this defense?
If they have that great of a relationship, but I don't think it's necessary.
Because
that defense is getting better.
And
Keanu
Dan
O'Neal,
and some guys don't want
to lead the league in sacks.
Yes, and some guys don't want a head coach being their defensive coordinator when they got their eyes on the head coaching job. That's the point I'm bringing. So it's very sensitive.
When the Jaguars brought in Doug Marrone? I'm like, well, the interim coach is now in place.
Yes,
when they brought him in, I'm like, you just hired your interim head coach. Why did you do that?
It's almost as if you're saying, don't blink because guess what. We got ourselves another guy that's gonna take your job when everybody else blinks. So just interesting, but so that's the nothing's been final. The only thing that's final is the entire Washington Redskins defensive staff out, and they got to get something fast. You had a quarterback that threw for almost 5,000 yards this year, and the weakness on a team secondary. You spent a lot of money on Josh Norman, and on a defense that wasn't very good.
Yeah, you know the other thing though, Sean, when you talk about the Redskins is the offensive play call. Jay Gruden, he's great at what he does. But I think they have to look at the mirror a little bit and see that it's not just the defense. They have some flaws. They put up a lot of yards, 28th in the red zone.
Yes.
They have their own issues.
Well, that biggest weakness for them. And you know, Atlanta last year's offense, the weakness in the red zone of throwing picks. Kirk say put up a lot of stats. It looks pretty. But if you're kicking field goals or turning it over in the red zone, that's a problem. They must fix that. Whew. Started off big. Talking football. Brian Barrett, Joe George, Adam Sager, I'm Sean Salisbury. Paul Flannery at the bottom of the hour talking NBA. It's SB Nation Radio.
You're listening to Prime Cut on SB Nation Radio. Here's your host, the quarterback, Sean Salisbury.
Yeah, one of my treasured possessions was that handwritten Christmas card from Bill Belichick.
Yeah, it's a pretty nice gift.
Yeah, though. Considering we're just talking about it between that, you know, we know Bill's a little bit distant. And we're talking about Chris Berman, who's boys with Belichick, and they tight. And Chris will be leaving Monday countdown, really his full-time role at ESPN at the end of this year. And so congratulations to him. I spent 12 years there, and he treated me. I've worked with him many times, treated me like gold, was always very kind, and he is ESPN. I mean, he just is.
So you're saying he was really close with Belichick.
Belichick, and I was fortunate that for some reason, because I was always honest and opinionated, but never was a Patriot Belichick hater. And so at Christmas time, I'm thinking, this is cool, and they always treated me good and were respectful. You know, Bill's distant. You got to really work hard to get in there. And so I just tried to do the right thing and be respectful. And I went to my mailbox at ESPN and I was like, I got a handwritten Christmas card from him. And I'm like, this is the coolest thing ever. It was like, it'd be like a kid getting a jersey from Willie Mays or whoever your favorite signed and
he threw the towel into the stands.
Yeah. And so I'm thinking, and I know it's not a big deal to others, but for me, when I was, you know, in the probably the 6 years into my career at ESPN and was pretty opinionated on TV. So some may not. And I always gauged my, this is the honest to God truth. I gauged what I said on TV two ways. I never wanted to talk over the person who didn't really know. So I'd say, okay, the average fan, what are they thinking if you're explaining what cover two means? So I would, when I say average fan, the fan who may not have know a lot about football. So I wanted to make sure easily explainable to them. But you know the standard was for me that when I was on TV every single day, what my thought process was? What would Belichick think? Not even if I was talking about them. What would he think if I broke this coverage down? Would he say, Sean, he's so full of crap. That's not what we think. Or, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So my standard was always him to somewhere be able to talk, not over the, when I say amateur or the person who doesn't know, or if it was the first time they'd watched football, but to be able to explain it in a way where Belichick doesn't say, the captain obvious. That he was my standard. He was my goat then.
So essentially what you were trying to do is to the guy sitting on his couch watching pregame or whatever it is, some kind of highlight, the layman, you had to have him understand what you were saying, but also you had to make it sound like you were knowledgeable enough, not that you weren't. I'm just saying you had to sound knowledgeable enough that Bill Belichick would respect what you were saying.
That was for me, yes. Respect is the key word. And he would know while saying it, and he doesn't even, I don't even know, I've never told Bill this. I don't even know if I've ever told anybody this. But he was my...
Well, you've told a lot of people that.
Yes, and he was my... I said, if I can make sure that when Belichick's watching me... Now, I loved all the coaches, but he was... If I can make sure when Belichick's watching me that he's saying, Sean, one, knows what he wants, knows what he's saying. Two, he's done his homework. Three, is a guy I'd like to be... is a guy that I could talk football with. And four, that when I gave my opinion on something, even if it was critical of him... that he didn't think I was full of crap and it was just attacking him to attack him or kiss his ass just to kiss his ass. Yeah. And he was my goat. He was the guy that the standard I wanted to live up to when I broke down X's and O's, telestrator, opinion on TV, and then to the layman, like you said, I've watched a couple. What do you mean when they say cover two? To be able to explain it to them without getting so detailed that they're lost two sentences in. But Chris Berman's going to leave, so maybe we'll share some stories as we go along. I know this. I've never said on this. We'd said on the set, and I'll tell you a quick story about him. And Paul Flannery is going to join us at the bottom of the hour. We'll have Clay Helton on today, guys, at 5 Eastern.
Are you going to be able to control yourself?
Yeah, I think so. I think so. At 5 o'clock Eastern, talking USC football and the bowl game and future.
How many questions will you ask about Sam Darnold?
That'll probably be the second one after I ask how Clay is doing. Okay, there you go. We won't get to a third question without Darnold's name being mentioned. Stephen Michaels from Raiders Daily, talk Raiders and Houston Texans playoff game. And Dennis Bermudez and Alexa Grasso, UFC, going to be in studio. So we'll talk to them at 5:15 Eastern. Little UFC, get you to the mat, punch you in the face type. So we'll have them. Maybe I'll just threaten to kick both their ass, see what happens.
Yeah, don't do that.
I don't think so. I think that's probably something I'm not going to do. I'm not that stupid. So story about Berman, one, kind of share them. And congratulations to Chris. He's got to the point where he'll still be affiliated with ESPN, and he'll still do things. He just won't. The key is who's going to replace him on Sunday countdown. Is it Trey Wingo or someone else? But they got a lot of good candidates to choose from. So I could tell you some fun things about him. And that whenever we were doing Monday Night Countdown one time, well, it's happened more than once, and he is one of those guys that's frantic, as you can tell. You know, I'm telling you, we'd be sitting there, and I'd be sitting in the chair waiting for a live show. Producers in the ear, everybody's in, and he's, you literally saw him maybe 15 minutes earlier typing up the last part of what's going to go in the television, because he typed all his own stuff, and he's a hunt and peck guy.
Oh, he's okay. A single
figure. Oh, yeah, and you do with the, yeah. It was just classic. You know, you couldn't picture him being a brilliant guy, because he's a Brown graduate, he's a smart dude. But he's an every man's guy. He's the layman that you think. He, dude, inevitably, they'd say, Sean, where's Chris? Where's Boomer? I say, he'll be here. He'll be here. And they'd say, okay, 60 seconds. He's not in the studio. And when live TV starts, live TV starts or it's day, we can't fade to black at the beginning of a show. So I'm sitting there. I'm starting to get beads of sweat thinking, okay, what if I have to open up Money? It's a special Thursday edition of Monday Night Countdown. And it go 30, 25. He hadn't walked in the studio yet. But I always know that he's going to be there, and so do they. Tip and 15. Dude, he hasn't got his IFBN mic on. 12, 11, 10. Sits down. Feeling, maybe F-bomb and just could talk to himself. It's like computers getting down the hallway. I can't believe 5, 4. Dude, I'm seeing, puts his IFB in, fixes the mic on his tie. But the 3, 2, 1, you're live. It's a special Thursday night edition of Monday. Dude, and you'd sit there and you'd look at him and he'd have, you know, little beads of sweat. And I'm sitting there looking at him. I'm saying, how?
Where did he go though? Where? Why?
He'd be in his he's always, he's just running behind. One of those guys. And when I say running behind, I don't mean it. Just one of those guys that he's comfortable in chaos. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
He is one of those guys that comfortable in chaos to the point where if he was in his chair 10 minutes early, it's like no. Now he was always prepared, but always running around scrambling. Because he got to do this. He got to do the 2-minute drill. He's right. I got so much to do. But he would, and I mean, he'd be down doing for 3, 2. And I'm sitting there ready, makeup, 2. Yes. And he'd get right, and he'd say, how? And he'd roll right through it and get right through it and get out to Edwerder, our Edwerder with, and I'm like, unbelievable. Then the contrast is like a Mike Tirico. Mike Tirico's in his chair sitting there. And one time a camera went out. We're doing Monday Night Countdown. Like they said, Mike, we have no camera. This is like 30 seconds before the show starts. Mike probably wouldn't even remember because, Mike, camera 2's out, and the teleprompter's not working. No problem. Tirico was like, you could have had a fire burning around him. The studio's on fire. I'm not in my chair. Food being thrown at us, and he'd be like, welcome to Monday Night Countdown. Mike Tirico along with Sean Salisbury, and Susie Colbert will join us here in a few minutes out in New York, and you're thinking, how does he do? I mean, it's smooth. As Zamboni ice, you know what I'm saying?
How much do they use the teleprompters?
A lot to get in and out of breaks. But for instance, a guy like Chris Fowler on Saturday game day, the long show, none. Fowler's amazing with that. But
he's got those cards.
On a story read, they have to so they get all the story reader who they're throwing to. I never read a teleprompter as an analyst, you know, doing that. But the hosts, they have to because they got to get all the tags in and stuff, or a commercial, or when we're coming back. But we're coming back. More Berman stories. Congrats to Chris. We got a lot going on. Paul Flannery, SB Nation, NBA, going to join us right here, SB Nation.
You're listening to Prime Cut on SB Nation Radio. Here's your host, the quarterback, Sean Salisbury.
Oh, yeah. Brian Barrett, myself, Adam Sager, Joe George, Sean Salisbury, and the bench warmers. We're here. 30 minutes of passionate early radio. Congrats to Chris Berman as he'll step aside full-time from his full-time role at ESPN after being a, well, he is the pioneer when you think ESPN. It is Chris Berman and to the Washington Redskins who are in search of an entire defensive staff. But we'll get to more football, more good Chris Berman stories and his impact on ESPN and the sports world. And who's going to replace him? But now let's talk NBA, SB Nation. He covers the NBA for SB Nation, does a great job, joins us every week. Paul Flannery here on SB Nation Radio. Paul, what's going on, brother? Thanks for taking the time. And will we see two triple-doubles tonight from Russ and James?
Yeah, wouldn't that be something? You know, it's hey, Sean, how are you?
Good to see you, buddy.
it's really fascinating, and I've been thinking about this a lot lately. The fact that those two guys plus Durant were on the same team together and were drafted in successive years, I know it's old news, but my goodness. I don't think any of those guys could be doing what they're doing, you know, on the same team, on the same nucleus. I think there's only one ball and three stars. It gets a little tricky. But, geez, can you imagine that collection of talent? I think we'll be talking about that for years to come.
Yeah, it sounds like a trio like that maybe could make it to an NBA Finals for, like, years to come. Oh, wait.
Right.
They didn't want to keep those guys together. It doesn't make much sense to me. But I want to move on to something that just emerged today, Paul, as a report came out that Jimmy Butler, the Bulls, may be willing to move him. Are you hearing anything on that? And does that make sense to you for a complete rebuild? Like, is Jimmy Butler the only piece they could get quality back for? And if it's you, would you want to move on from Jimmy Butler the way he's playing?
Okay, so I'll take the last part first. No, I would not want to move on from Jimmy Butler. I don't understand why the Bulls would even consider the idea. He's 26 years old, I believe. He gets better every year. He works really, really, really hard at his game. He wants to be great. And, you know, if I'm the Bulls, and this is my issue with what they did in the offseason. If I'm the Bulls, I take a look at what we had. Okay, we can move on from Derrick Rose. We can move on from Joakim Noah. We can say goodbye to that era. Let's build around Jimmy Butler. We've got a couple of nice young players. Let's, you know, we might take our lumps for a year. Maybe we can get good in the draft again. Let's build around Jimmy Butler. Instead, they go out and sign Rondo, who's been a disaster. They sign Dwayne Wade, who's been okay. But that mix has never been a really good idea to me. But this is not the first time they've entertained the idea of trading Jimmy Butler. They got pretty far down the road with the Celtics on draft night, decided to pull back. Well, somebody decided to pull back at any rate. And so to me, it doesn't make a ton of sense. I mean, if I'm a team that wants to make a big move for a star player, I'm going all in for Jimmy Butler. I think he's been a top 10 player this year.
Yeah, I was going to ask, Paul, do you think that Paul Flannery covers the NBA for SB Nation joins us. Paul, do you think that Jimmy Butler can you build a championship team around him, or is he better as a number two?
Well, I think if you have a really good team, and I'll use the Celtics as an example because they've been discussing this for a while now. But if you add him to a team, and you'd have to give up a lot probably to get him, but if you add him to a team with Horford and presumably Isaiah Thomas is still there, like, that's a lot of firepower that you're throwing at people.
Right.
And he can really defend. Jimmy can. So is he, like, the number one guy? To me, there's only, like, three or four, maybe five number one guys in the league. But can you build a really, really good team with him as a central figure, a 1A, if you will, or a 2, if you want? Fine. Yeah, I think you can.
Yeah, it's interesting to see what's going to happen. And it brings me to this, is the past couple of years we've been hearing guys that could be moved, big-time stars, DeMarcus Cousins. Now we hear this with Jimmy Butler. There's even been rumblings about Paul George the past couple of months. Is this the year that we finally see, like, back to the Carmelo Anthony year, where we actually see a big-name guy moved at the deadline?
I still have my doubts. And, I mean, you mentioned Paul George. Like, from what I understand, Indiana hangs up the phone if you even mention his name, which right, which they should. You know, and I think, you know, the new collective bargaining agreement will go into effect over the summer. And I know there's nothing like great radio, great CBA talk on the radio, but I think every team is trying to figure out, you know, what's the landscape going to be. So if you're Sacramento, you now have a mechanism to lock in DeMarcus for basically his entire career. Now, do you want to do that? I don't know. He's a special case. But if you're Indiana, you can presumably do that with Paul George. Absolutely. You're going to try to go that route instead of trading a guy. Which is what makes the Jimmy Butler thing so fascinating to me, is that if a guy like that is actually going to be available, make the move now because you may not have another chance at it.
Paul, how deep, we were talking about this before you came on, how deep is this class that'll be NBA eligible coming around here as we head into the summertime? How deep is this college class?
Well, you know, I don't spend a ton of time thinking about college, but I happen to be talking to somebody who does just the other day, so it's good timing here. And he thinks there's five or six potential, you know, really good kind of star players available at the top of the draft. It's deep draft in that regard. Usually there's a couple, maybe two or three. It hasn't really shaken out yet what that order is going to be. I know a lot of people like the kid from Washington, Markel Fultz, who's
yep.
got all kinds of talent. But yeah, I think it's good. Like from the people I've been talking to, they think it's going to be really good, which if you're in that lottery situation, you're not looking to deal one of those picks. You're thinking about getting a guy that can be your franchise for a while. So from what I hear, it's going to be good. Now, all those guys are freshmen. And so that, you know, so that's a little bit of a wild card there. It's not like a Tim Duncan situation from back in 97. All these guys are freshmen. So, you know, we'll see how this shakes out. But from what I understand, it's a much deeper draft than years past.
Don't you love it when we're talking about an 18-year-old freshman saying, oh, yeah, he's a franchise changer. And we don't even talk about seniors anymore. It's the truth. Crazy. Paul Flannery, SB Nation, joins us here on SB Nation Radio talking NBA. Paul, we were joking about this the other day about the Lakers or Sacramento honestly going to sneak in as an 8 seed in the playoffs. What, Sacramento, what, two nights ago, 14 and 19. Is it possible, honestly, that we are going to see one of those two teams in the playoffs?
Somebody's got to make it. this is, you know, and so there's a couple of teams I got my eyes on here. One is New Orleans.
We talked
with
Brian
started to
brought
play
them
better.
Up. Yep, yep, yep.
They've started to play better, and, you know, that. I think, you know, if they can stay healthy, which they never can, but if they can, then they might have a shot here. And, you know, I still think Portland's going to get it together, and they might need to make a move. If they got a legit big, like Nerlens Noel or somebody like that, that could really help them. You know, I still think Portland has a chance to pull together. They've been awful now for a while, but they're not that far out of it. So, you know, if Sacramento, okay. You know, the Lakers, I think, are still a year away. Denver is clearly they're fighting with each other. So to me, I still think Portland and New Orleans might be able to sneak in there, but somebody's going to get that spot. And what do you get for it, guys? You're going to get blown out by the Warriors in four games.
Well, welcome to New England Patriots football if you're the AFC with a bad quarterback. That's what's going to happen if you win this weekend. No
doubt. Well, Paul, maybe at least Boogie can get like six technicals in four games, and that'll work out for the entertainment value.
It'd be a show, man. It'd be a show.
Hey, Paul, obviously I know you covered the Celtics for a while, so we got to get this in. Isaiah Thomas, I thought last year that was kind of the ceiling for the guy. How do you explain what he's been able to do this year?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. I thought so, too. And he's been better this year. He's, you know, to Isaiah's credit, he's really worked on his playmaking a lot. When he came to the Celtics, he had the reputation as a shoot-first guard, which he obviously still is. But he really worked on being a better playmaker, and he started to do that last year. But I really think the addition of Al Horford has paid huge dividends for these guys because now what you have is they run a lot of spread pick-and-roll where they just spread the court out and play a lot of small guys. But now you got Horford picking and popping to the three-point line as opposed to, say, Jared Sullinger popping to 20 feet, and the court is now wide open for Isaiah. He's really hard to stay in front of, and he's a tough kid. I mean, he goes in there with the intention of scoring, getting you in foul trouble. He is a tremendous player. I hope people understand just how good he is and not just as this sort of gimmick as this, like, short guy doing all this stuff. He's legitimately good. I don't know if he's going to make the All-Star team. There's five great guards out there. And somebody's probably going to get left out. But to me, he's been tremendous.
He can flat out play. Paul, we got 15 seconds. Who gets the better of it tonight, Harden or Westbrook?
I'll go Harden, man. He's been my guy all year.
MVP. This is a triple-double. I mean, are you going tonight, Brad?
No, are you?
Nope, no, not going to go, but I will be watching on TV. Paul, we appreciate it. I know you'll be tuned into that ball game as well. We always appreciate you joining us. Let's do it again next week. Enjoy tonight. It should be a great show. We appreciate it, brother.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks, guys.
Thanks. Paul Flannery, SB Nation. Talking NBA. Harden and Westbrook tonight. Should be a blast. Brian Barrett.
I'm taking the South, Paul.
Are you?
Yeah.
I'm going to go Westy tonight. Salisbury, Sager, Joe George. It's SB Nation Radio. Sean Salisbury and the Bench Warmers. We're having a blast.
You're listening to Prime Cut on SB Nation Radio. Here's your host, the quarterback, Sean Salisbury.
Along with Brian Barrett, Adam Sager, Joe George, it's SB Nation Radio, Sean Salisbury and the Benchwarmers. Paul Flannery, we're talking NBA, Brian, and you as a Boston guy. It's a deep guard, all-star type group.
In the East, yeah.
Who gets left off?
Kyrie's
you can't leave. You can't leave Isaiah Thomas off the list.
No, he's going to get in. He's going to get in.
So you go, what, five small and seven so-called front quarters?
Front court, yeah. No center, which nowadays we could actually go back to the center. Don't you think, Sager? If you think about the guys that we now have in the league, like Porzingis could be a center. Karl Anthony Towns could be a center. Yeah. Not saying those guys would get in, but eventually maybe we put the center back on the ballot. Make Shaq happy. But, yeah, Kyrie, DeMar DeRozan, Isaiah Thomas, Kyle Lowry, John Wall. So okay, that leaves Kemba Walker off.
Yeah, well, and that's okay.
You're okay with that?
Yeah. Out of the, who you got? Okay. It's not. I mean, I'm bummed for somebody who gets, as we call it, snubbed. But who are you going to take off for him?
If I was going to take one of those guys off, it would be DeRozan.
No, you wouldn't.
If I was going to take one off for Kemba, I'm saying that'd be the guy.
No, you can't take.
Yeah, USC fight on.
You can't take the fight on guy off.
No, but I'd be fine with that. I mean, Kemba's been great, but. Any of those guys, he can't say, I've been clearly better than those guys.
Right.
You know what I mean? Kyle Lowry's having the best year of his career.
Right. And we know DeRozan, he can score a little bit. And a front court, you think Porzingis is getting left off?
No, I personally feel Porzingis should make it. Yeah, he's been incredible. The only thing that would keep
him player on their team without question
is he's missed the past three games with the Achilles issue, so you wonder when he gets back.
But you also wonder if he'd want to risk it in an All-Star break anyway. You know what I'm saying? If there's a little source that I need this time off for rest, even if he was healthy, if he came back, but it was just kind of a tweener, wasn't 100%, if he takes the All-Star break off. You know what I mean?
Yeah, the front court in the East not nearly as sexy as the back court.
Is LeBron going to be okay?
He may make
got
it.
Got a shot?
You think he's got a chance?
LeBron, Kevin Love, both got to make it.
Yeah, Giannis Antetokounmpo is going to be in.
Yep. Say his name fully.
Giannis Antetokounmpo.
How does our boy say it, Sigs? Listen to this one. Stacy King. Watch Stace.
We'll get it in a second.
It's one of the all-time greats. All-time great. His house, Stace. And I love Stace, how he pronounces his last name.
You know what he was saying the other night during the Jimmy Butler 50-point game, Stacey King was? Channeling his inner Michael Jordan. Like, let's be easy, okay? This team may not make the playoffs, and we're talking about channeling
your inner Michael. Yeah. Anyway, to pronounce his last name one more time, bro?
Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Yeah, he's in. Okay, who else?
LeBron, you say, Kevin Love is in.
No doubt.
And then after that, Paul George is going to be in.
No-brainer.
So then it gets complicated. You have...
So that's what, nine guys right there, you just named?
Yeah, you got Carmelo Anthony. Oh, Jimmy Butler is going to be in.
Butler's a 10. They'll put him at a 3.
He's a lock. Hassan Whiteside's on the ballot. Jabari Parker having a decent year for Milwaukee. Front court's tough, man.
Their backcourt. Their backcourt's loaded, though.
Yeah, but how about the backcourt of the West? It's going to be... Curry, Harden, Westbrook, Thompson, Chris Paul. Damian Lillard's going to be left out.
Think they're any good?
Yeah, that's going to be decent.
Why don't we just start out? Will you ever go five guards? Would you like to see all five of those guys on the floor at the same time in the All-Star game? How fun would that be?
Yeah,
just for a couple trips up and down the floor.
I want Durant at the five.
Yeah.
That's what we need, Durant at the five. Yeah, you remember it was, it was probably mid-2000s where – I believe Greg Popovich was the coach, and he went with the all 7-foot lineup. It was awesome.
Yes.
It was Dirk, Tim Duncan, Shaq was in there. It was incredible.
He had like 5 7-footers.
Yeah, he did. He literally put 5 7-footers out there. It was unbelievable.
See, I think that's priceless. That's why I say with that Western guards, wouldn't it be fun if they did that and all of a sudden the East said, okay, we'll have a little fun with it too.
Yeah, you're right. They should do that.
Yes, why not?
Do it like for 6 minutes.
Yeah, just say, and you look at each other and say, hey, let's do this. So you, like during the practice today, you just tell the other coach, hey, in the middle of the second quarter, I'm going to roll out all five guards for that 6-minute run or middle of the third quarter. You want to do it? And have them match you. And let's go 10 small. Just play fast basketball and have a blast. How fun would that be?
Yeah.
You don't think there's 10 guards in this that are – think we talked yesterday about how the guards dominate the play now in basketball and have for a while. It's been a guard game or a perimeter guys game for a while. That the bigs don't dominate yet. We still want to draft them first if there's a good one. Look. You just named 10 dudes right there, perimeter people that you can be considered three, but that are backcourt players. Come on, dude. How fun would that be? How many points would there be between the 10 of them in 6 minutes?
A lot.
Well, at an all-star game.
Well, because you'd also have Curry, Harden, and Westbrook.
Who don't understand how to spell defense.
Yeah, they don't play defense.
Let alone play it, right.
So I guess you'd have to shade towards the West. I mean, the East, because they play a little D. Well, Isaiah Thomas doesn't play D either. How about this? How about because some of these things get stale and the skill competition they do at All-Star Weekend is so stupid where they like dribble around the guys.
Gosh.
How about a one-on-one tournament? How badass would that be? Who would you take, Durant?
Harden, because he's a big who can shoot three. He's a long-range shooter, I guess.
The only problem is if you play Curry and he hits the first one, you're not getting the ball back.
Yeah, that's the problem. Now, the reason why you don't take a big is because...
Well, there's that LeBron guy, too.
Yeah.
He'd be decent.
Well, he's but 6'8", 260 gives you a little bit to work with, and he's shooting... Really, he's even improved his three-point shooting this year. I don't know who'd win that. Westbrook would be a pretty good one because he can get to the rim and challenge you. But the size difference with LeBron, when you get a guy like that, you can back him in. But I don't know, man.
I think you named the two, LeBron and Durant.
You think that's it?
You put them on opposite sides and then watch them clash at the end. And
one's a little more physical than the other, but one could take the other one away from the basket so easy and you can't stop him with KD. That'd be a fun. I've said a long time ago, back in the day, we could look it up, either Bob Lanier or Nate Tiny Archibald won the one-on-one competition. They used to have Paul Westfall would do the horse competition because he was ambidextrous, could shoot with both hands. They had some great. Tiny Archibald was hard. You couldn't cover him. You could not cover him. That was back in the day also when I think Tiny averaged 30 points a game at one point, but you could 32 points a game. They couldn't play zone.
Again?
Tiny Archibald?
Yeah.
Cincinnati Omaha King or Kansas City Omaha Kings or Cincinnati Kings or whatever they called them? Yeah. They might have been Kansas City Omaha Kings.
Spent some time
Nate Tiny Archibald. Yeah. He did. Late in his career, he was a Baltimore Celtic.
That's what I was getting at.
I know you were. When he was in his prime, I think he was a Kansas City King. Clay Helton next.